From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 2016 when Senator Chuck Schumer spoke about the optics and photonics industry in New York State. He explained that there were more than 120 optics, photonics, and imaging companies employing more than 24,000 people across the Finger Lakes region, the Southern Tier, and Central New York. Rochester was and still is a leader in those industries. And for a city known for the so-called Big Three for so long, Kodak, Xerox, Bausch & Lomb, a transition of sorts has had to occur. One might ask where all the bright minds in R&D went after the Big Three lost their dominance. While a number of people, yeah, they retired, they took buyouts, others transferred their skills to maybe optics and photonics. And the question is, does this new economy provide a place for them to thrive, at least here? Can they stay in Rochester? Can we rebuild the economy in a different direction technologically here? Our guests share their stories of transition this hour, what they expect to see for the future of technology, research, and Rochester, and we'll discuss an upcoming conference aimed at highlighting Rochester's strengths in those areas. So let's say hello and welcome our guests. I was joking before the hour began with the managing director of Luminate, and that's Sujatha Ramanujan, who has been on this program before. And I said, we always end up talking about other people. So I'm excited to make you talk about you this hour. Welcome. How are you?
I'm doing quite well, thank you.
It's great to have you. Also with us is Julie Gerstenberger, founder and CEO of Moondog Labs. Julie, welcome. Thanks for being here.
It's a pleasure.
With us in studio is Mike McDougall, president of McDougall Communications. Mike, welcome to you.
Thanks.
And also with us is Terry Klass, chairman of the Light and Sound Interactive Conference and head of business development for Photonics with the New York State Division of Science, Technology, and Innovation. Welcome. How are you?
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Well, there's a lot to discuss this hour, and I think it's probably beneficial for us to just ask our guests right out of the gate what it is that they're doing now. So when I mentioned, Sujatha, what Luminate is to people in your industry, they know. To our listeners, what's the short description of what Luminate is?
So it's an investment fund, and it's an accelerator focused on helping startup companies get the investment and grow in this area and hire.
Okay. And Julie, Moondog Labs, founded about 5 years ago. You're based in Fairport. What is it that you're doing now?
Sure. We make accessory lenses for mobile devices, filmmakers primarily. Steven Soderbergh, Hollywood, Cannes, Sundance have all used our products. So it's been an exciting ride.
And Terry, as chairman of Light and Sound Conference coming up here, you've got that conference coming up June 25th through the 27th at the Riverside Convention Center in Sibley Square. Who do you want to be there? Give me sort of a snapshot of what you want to accomplish and who you want to be there.
Sure. So at its foundation, the Light and Sound Interactive Conference is an economic development initiative. And by that, we will invite and attract some of the tech giants to Rochester and other companies from around the country so that they can interact and collaborate and find business opportunities with companies in this region.
Who should come? Who should be there?
I think the product development managers, R&D managers, people that are in the technology for optics, photonics, imaging, and some of the fastest growing markets in the world, like AR, VR, games and interactive media. We have a Department of Defense track. So I would say mostly it's business executives, but leaning towards the technical side of the spectrum.
Okay. Is there still room to attend if people want to be there?
Absolutely. Lightandsoundinteractive.org. You may register anytime.
Lightandsoundinteractive.org. And we'll get back to that coming up here because I know that they've got guests, as Terry said, coming in from around the country. Mike, I don't think, of all the things I've known about you, the Kodak piece. I mean, you've got a little bit of a Kodak background?
I do. I was at Kodak for about 5 years in the communications group.
And so now do you find yourself sort of like kind of trying to keep a bird's eye view of the industry in your post-Kodak career here?
I think you have to, right? You see the number of people, not only execs, but researchers, those in other functions, where they've moved on. And it's fascinating to see what that company really has created.
Well, and Julie is an example. So let's talk about what you've done here. Often when I will tell you that journalists, when we talk about sort of the R&D, the brain trust of the Big Three, a lot of the assumptions we make is, well, you all took buyouts and you all retired. Mm-hmm. And, that was just sort of the way of the world when things were changing in Rochester. Not true for everybody, it turns out. And you were at Kodak for how many years?
27 years.
What did you do there?
Had great experiences across the product development spectrum. My background's in engineering. Developed cameras, scanners, cinematography equipment, and then moved on to the business side more, doing technology strategy and new product partnerships with startups and universities.
So in a moment, we'll talk about what you're doing now with Moondog, but I kind of want to go back to Kodak and maybe in those early days of your career, and just ask you if you felt like you had the room to occasionally fail. You know, the best R&D, I would think, doesn't always throw something that sticks immediately. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious to know what research was like back in those days for you.
Sure. I think we absolutely had the room to fail. And any of us who worked on product development were particularly excited when the products we worked on were actually commercialized and went to market, because there were a lot of things that didn't. There was a lot of technologies that developed, and the timing just wasn't right. It was actually the motivation for me to move a little bit away from the product development side of things, because I got a little bit frustrated that more of the technology wasn't getting to market, and I began to realize that a lot of the business decisions and the market timing were even more critical than some of the technology development.
When was your last year at Kodak?
My last year was in 2012.
So, you know, certainly by then, so much had changed. But, you know, sir, I would think throughout your 27 years, there was somewhat gradual but constant change. At what point did you maybe look around with colleagues and say, I don't know how long we're going to have a company here?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think for many folks at Kodak, there was always an awareness of, you know, particularly for those who are close to retirement, of, you know, what might the runway look like. I felt like I had so much variety in my career and so many opportunities that wasn't really my focus. I was more interested in, you know, the opportunities and the work that we were doing until, you know, around the 2011-2012 timeframe, when I just decided it was really time for me to move on and do something else.
Was it hard to see what happened to the company?
Absolutely. I'm a second-generation Kodaker. I grew up bowling in the Kodak Bowling League as a child. And so, you know, for folks who grew up in Rochester, there's this different connection to Kodak as an employer and as a part of the community. So it was difficult to watch that.
So as a second-generation Kodaker and as someone who maybe was gradually realizing that your entire career would not be spent there, but knowing that you didn't want to retire, did you entertain the idea that my future career might not be here in Rochester?
Oh, absolutely. My husband was also at Kodak, and when we both left, we considered moving to Michigan, where he has family. We looked at opportunities there, and you know, when all things kind of shook out, decided that it was much more important to stay in Rochester because of the technology foundation and the opportunities to start new companies. We both work, my business partner and I founded a company. My husband works for a smaller design firm with, you know, national clients and international clients. And so you can do a lot here because of the talent that's here.
Now, you mentioned the talent. I get that. But when you mention sort of the technological base here, make that, you know, more tangible for me. Help me see what you mean by that, that would help you decide, hey, if we stay here, here's the advantage on the technology side.
Sure. So I didn't immediately upon leaving Kodak decide that the next step was to start a company. I looked at, you know, other directions to go with my career. But in optics and photonics particularly, you know, the talent and the resources, the companies, you know, the suppliers that we can work with, so much of what we need is right here, testing capability. And for Moondog Labs in particular, our first products were very focused on filmmaking. So the whole filmmaking and photography community that's here could be a great sounding board for us. I think Sujatha can, you know, probably speak a little more to the funding aspect of things. We launched our company on Kickstarter. And so, you know, really didn't go the venture capital route, which, you know, can be more of a challenge in the region. So that resource, I would say, you know, I wouldn't put Rochester in the top 10 list. Yeah, so, yet, Sujatha.
Yeah, that's good. So, and by the way, for listeners, I hope what you're hearing already is a very realistic look at this industry. You know, there's a lot of PR and there's a lot of spin, but there's also, this is a city that produced remarkable things over the decades. We can't lose sight of that. And right, remarkable research and development here. And outstanding talent. And so the question is, you know, how is it really fitting in here? So when you Kickstarter to start a new company, when did you kind of give me the mindset of the Kickstarter for doing this? You probably set a goal, you gave yourself a timeline to reach it. And what happens if you don't meet that goal?
So on Kickstarter, you know, there are a number of crowdfunding platforms, but on Kickstarter, if you don't meet your funding goal, then you don't get any of the money.
Right.
And, you know, we decided to launch on Kickstarter because our products were right at that intersection of artistry and creativity. So, you know, people creating films and technology. And that's, you know, that's the folks who really live on Kickstarter looking for new things. So it was the perfect platform for us. We really went there as much, if not more, for the market feedback and the buy-in and the visibility as we did for the money. You really shouldn't necessarily expect to develop particularly a hardware product and get all the money you need on Kickstarter. The odds are not great for that.
Did you meet your goal?
Absolutely. We met twice our goal. Mm-hmm. We were the first at that time. We reached out to other Rochester Kickstarter groups to get their insight, and we were actually the first successful hardware product to come out of Rochester. So I talked to a lot of folks that did films or did software products, but we couldn't find at that time another. There have been many since.
Did you get the sense at the time that there were a lot of your former colleagues at the Big Three kind of doing this, kind of trying to find a way to stay in Rochester to leverage what we still had here before people in your position either retired or moved to other cities? Was that happening often?
Oh, absolutely. Not necessarily, you know, starting companies, but people looking to stay and contribute. There are a number of colleagues who companies came and set up satellite offices in Rochester because the talent was here and it was worth their while to do that. I talked to one recruiter about a position out in Connecticut, and I wasn't interested in Connecticut. And he said, you know, what is in the water in Rochester? Because I cannot get these great optics folks to move. Some do, many do, and, you know, Terry can talk about folks who were scattered across the country and are coming home for LSI, but many folks really want to stay because of the connections they have here in the community.
So I imagine that Kickstarter was sometime around, what, 2013, something
right,
like that?
Late 2013.
Late 2013. When did you know that Moondog was going to be a place you could stay for a while?
I think that, so we launched the company on Kickstarter in November, and we were approached during our Kickstarter by a filmmaker who wanted to use our product, and he shot over the Christmas break. And then we had a handful of prototypes. We sent him two. And then we didn't hear from him for many months, despite reaching out. Finally, in August, he let us know that his film was done. He was taking it to Sundance. And it was really at Sundance that we knew, because he got huge response. You know, the final credit at the premiere was, you know, shot with Moondog Labs lenses on an iPhone 5. And the audience gasped because they didn't realize it had been shot on iPhone. And so once that was there, it really gave iPhone filmmaking that much credibility. Before, it had been kind of gimmicky. And that's when it was clear that, you know, we had really timed things well with our products.
How's the company doing today?
Doing really well. We're getting ready to expand our offerings beyond mobile devices to other platforms, point of view cameras, and launching new products this week. So shipping to, I think, 46 countries at last count, and we have 24 different products.
How many people work with you, for you?
So we have a sister company, Moondog Optics, that does a lot of our product development. So the total team is six people at this point.
Okay. Are you pretty comfortable with that size?
We need to grow. We need to grow on the operation side of our business. We brought on a great brand manager last year. And so but when your team is that small, you have to be very selective.
That's a good problem to have.
It's a great problem.
And, you know, I was talking to a friend in another state who launched his own company a decade ago who recently said, boy, the first couple of years, it was just like, myself and my partner in business stay in business? Can we stay afloat? Can we make enough money to survive? Now, you know, they're making $1.5 to $2 million a year. And he said, we're making less money, him and I, because, you know, there's so much fluctuation here. You're employing all these people. You want to pay benefits generously. You want to contribute to 401ks. It's just all these interesting things that happen when a company grows. But those are the good problems to have.
Right.
Do you suspect you'll be doing this for a while?
Absolutely. And you know, we are growing. And I think it's about being selective in how, you know, how you invest in that growth and what direction you take. It is a challenge. You know, the first year or two, it was kind of a handful of us just going hardcore. And how do we scale that now is the challenge that we're looking forward to.
And before I turn to the other guest, Julie, I want you to kind of give me the Kodak, the R&D, the person on the inside perspective as you watch the Rochester regional public try to grapple with what photonics is, what optics is, timelines. There's a lot of debate about, you know, have we ramped up as fast as we hoped? Is this happening? Are we really a photonics town where there are over promises? What do you think the public maybe doesn't understand, or the way, perhaps the media, the news media, you know, how are you seeing this story unfold from your perspective?
I think the biggest thing that the public doesn't understand, you know, when I talk to folks outside the industry, is the huge platform that we're building on. You know, so the funding that's come in the last 5 years has been amazing, and the recognition, but the fact that the talent has been here and the work that's happened, whether it was under the auspices of the Big Three or not, you know, this is not a new nascent activity. This is taking something that was quite mature and giving it a new level of funding and credibility. And a lot of people don't recognize that.
Do you think there's a lack of patience on the public's part, or do you think political leaders overpromised in any way?
I think political leaders often overpromise.
Get out of here.
This is a revelation, I know. I think that people are looking for really big news. And that's hard to deliver, you know, as opposed to baseball analogy, you know, lots of singles, lots of doubles and scoring, that people want, you know, big flashy home runs.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. And I'm sure to some degree culpability spreads in different directions there. Probably the public should realize that there's not going to be a Big Three again, I would think. I mean, that's my very lay approach on it, yeah. Because I mean, I think you go back to 2015, 2016, and there was this idea, I mean, the vice president's here, all these political leaders are here. And for a moment, there was this surge of hope of, well, this is the new Kodak. This is the new B&L. This is the new Xerox. Mm-hmm. And as an industry, it may be very sustainable and supportive, but it's probably a lot of little pie slices as opposed to one big one, it sounds like.
That's my view.
Okay. Well, online where, by the way? Where can people see more about Moondog?
www.moondoglabs.com.
It's a really neat story. And Julie Gerstenberger is the founder and CEO of Moondog Labs after 27 years at Kodak, and is a really good example of the kind of former Kodak employee who decided not to retire, not to leave town, but to stay. Though she mentioned, Terry Klass, that there may be a scattering of former Big Three employees across the country at this point, as much as people didn't want to leave. Yeah?
Very true.
Are you pulling them back here for the conference?
It is certainly one of the goals of the conference is to re-energize some of those people that left and showcase Rochester as that optics, photonics, and imaging hub. And I think the conference is one of the ways to do that. I do think a majority of the technical staff at the Big Three are still here, but in a different venue for smaller and medium-sized manufacturers, but still have that skill set and that workforce to make this town a technology hub.
How do you feel about the way the public understands what's going on here versus, you know, some of the realities of either getting new companies here or getting existing companies here, getting things off the ground?
So there's a few things. First of all, the Integrated Photonics Institute, which is one of the 14 manufacturing institutes in the United States, which is deemed to be needed for the competitiveness of this country and the defense of this country. We're lucky in New York State to have that Integrated Photonics Institute here, and specifically the test assembly and packaging facility here in Rochester, New York. I'm very bullish on it. And so I don't, you know, it takes time for these technologies of photonics, integrated photonics specifically, to take hold and be part of the products in the future. But again, I'm very bullish on that technology. And if there's a, you know, the Silicon Valley, Rochester should be the photonics valley in the future.
See, careful. I mean, this is what makes people really get excited. I know you want people to be excited, but I would hope that it's realistic excitement, sustainable growth, the kind that says, you know, this is the new, I guess this is part of the new face of what our industry is going to be. And, you know, no one knew exactly when Americans would stop using, or the world would stop using film in the way, and obviously we haven't stopped using film entirely, but film in the way that it did. That was very hard to predict, you know, especially in the 60s, 70s, even into the 80s, into the 90s. Does this kind of an industry have staying power for decades, you think?
Absolutely. In fact, I think it will take decades for this to be that significant. But I think photons, the information and the capability of our products to, for example, how much data can be transferred over what distance, at what speed, using what power, at what cost, just happens that photons beat electrons every day. So it does have staying power, and I think you'll see that over the next several years.
Well, Mike McDougall, you're a communications guy here, so when you look at the story of what you think this region understands about what's going on here versus, you know, the challenges and the realities of making these transitions, how do you see the story unfolding?
I think the story is unfolding in a way we're almost redefining ourselves, what this region is. I get the chance to travel quite a bit. And I have to say, during my time after Kodak, even after Bausch & Lomb, you know, traveling around the world, people would say, oh, Rochester, right? How's Kodak doing? Less and less that's the case. Now I think we're known as a region more for our universities, RIT and the University of Rochester, I frequently get questions about. We do get questions around that legacy effect of, in terms of the science and the research. And as much as the rest of the world is seeing that, I think we are finally starting to see that ourselves. And I take your point well around overhyping and overpromoting what it could be, because we've been burned a little bit too, right, in the past. We need to be realistic. I agree with probably with the rest of the panel here that optics, photonics, imaging has a great lifespan ahead. But we shouldn't say we're going to be the epicenter or the only community that has that. It's also about collaboration. There's a lot of other great communities across this country and around the world that we can do work with.
Yeah, I mean, as someone who, I moved to Rochester in 2003, so I'm not a native Rochesterian, and my own view going into the future is that I would hope that this city and this region ends up being known for a number of things that kind of fit together to form a big picture. When you are known as Kodak City or Big Three, that is not a bad thing when it can employ 65,000 people, and then another company can employ 30,000, another can do 25. But that is a lot of eggs in one basket. And the concern is, if that falls out, what happens? And I think that's some of the fallout that we're seeing. So I'm not sure we ever want to be just one thing again. And that's part of being a tech hub, but also being healthcare and research and universities and a great workforce that is coming out of the schools here, as well as sort of, I think, promoting a little harder, as someone who's not from here, the legacies of Susan B. Anthony, Frederick Douglass, and all of the things that should be tied to equity of opportunity. I would hope that that's part of the story going forward. And it sounds like that transition, you're getting those questions less and less about the old Rochester.
We are. We're getting those questions less, or I get those questions less. And we also, you mentioned healthcare, right? That comes into play, including the optics elements of that, right? So Bausch & Lomb, right? Great legacy and still has a, you know, sizable workforce here. But you also have to look at like companies like CooperVision, which is the number two or number three player in contact lenses in the world right now, who employs more than 1,000 people in this community. So a lot of almost hidden optics-related businesses that we don't really see as having that type of impact in the community when they're right in front of us.
Yeah. How many Rochesterians know what Bausch & Lomb is? Just about all of them. How many know what Cooper Vision is?
Very few.
Isn't that amazing? Isn't that interesting?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a very interesting juxtaposition. After our only break of the hour, we're going to come back and talk to us to Jyantha Ramanujan, who is the managing director of Luminate, who has had her own fascinating career that I think will be instructive as to why, frankly, she wants to still be in Rochester and how she sees our region developing. If you're a former Kodaker or BNL or Xerox, you want to tell your story or your views of how things have evolved, the opportunities that you think are there for you, we'd love to hear your story, and you can email the program, connections@wxxi.org, or you can call 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. We'll also talk a little bit more about what's coming up in Light and Sound as an interactive conference starting June 25th at the Riverside Convention Center. That's coming right up, and we'll tell you more about that in our second half hour. Coming up in our second hour, one of my favorite storytellers joins us on Connections, Michael Lasser, host of Fascinating Rhythm and a kind of musical historian who has a new book about American songs and city life. We'll try to answer the question, when does a song become more than a song? What are historians going to say about this era 50 years from now? And how do we look back at the first half of the last century and define which songs stood out and changed our culture? That's next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. I'm thinking about what Mike McDougall, president of McDougall Communications, said about the way people talk about Rochester when he's not in Rochester, when he's traveling. And I'm very curious to know maybe what our listeners are experiencing there, or maybe what your friends and family think when they hear that you're from Rochester and what stands out first. I'm struck, and it's still in my mind, of Trevor Noah from The Daily Show saying, you know, how surprised he was when he came here for a performance, learning about the history of Frederick Douglass and Susan B. Anthony So there's so many different things to sort of pin an identity to. But part of that is the transition of where the big three has gone and the technology that's still in place and the industry that is here. And Jyantha Ramanujan, who is the managing director of Luminate, has been here for, a number of years now, a few years.
Yeah, it's been almost 20.
About 20 years. And so what was your first job with Kodak?
So I joined Kodak as a research scientist in the research labs, and I spent a number of years there. It is the longest I've ever spent in any one place of employment at 10 years, which I hopscotched a bit, and it was a really excellent experience. I did a lot of innovative research science, got to learn about businesses.
I know close to nothing about how research is conducted in places like the workplaces that you have been. So when you're part of a research team, are you given a task to pursue, or are you given more of a blank canvas to pursue?
So it can go either way. Usually there is an overarching structure, like we're working in this field, we're trying to make certain improvements, make printing faster, make digital cinema real. But with that very nebulous out there goal, kind of given a free hand to go figure out how to make that happen. And that's what Kodak would do. They'd be like, can you make digital cinema actually digital? So then we go out and find the right technology and design. So there was a huge amount of creativity with the governing force behind it.
Did you enjoy it?
I loved it.
Was there a lot of energy at the time when you were there?
It was very high energy. It was very creative. We all kind of grew up together, too, so it was fun.
But by the time you were there, there was already at least a bit of a total employment number shift underway. And by your decade there, it seemed, my recollection is, every few years it was another 2,000 or 3,000 layoffs, those kind of numbers, something like that.
So yeah, there was a decline going on inside of Kodak. But first of all, I think we need to remember, when people come, like particularly my generation of people, none of us expected to retire from one company. So I came to Kodak having already worked at GE, having worked at two different startups, with the expectation that I'd do some work at Kodak and then I'd go do my next thing. So that there wasn't a fear behind the, oh my goodness, they're downsizing. It would be, okay, what's next?
Do you think that your mentality would be different, though, if you were maybe second generation Kodak, something like that?
It could be. I think that, you know, part of it is generation, part of it is location. People had an expectation when they came to Kodak that they were going to be here. I think for those of us who came from other places and who'd worked in other places, it was not, it wasn't the same mentality at all. It was, this is the right thing right now, and something else may be the right thing in the future.
Would there have been a way with Kodak, for example, where that story didn't unfold the way it did? I mean, one of the common narratives, fair or not, is this is the company that invented digital and didn't really benefit from digital and got beat with digital by other companies. Again, fair or unfair?
Yeah, you know, I think there were a couple of different angles that it could have taken. This is really easy for me to say with hindsight as a research scientist, not operating on the business end. But there is something to be said about taking things that have a great deal of promise and separating them from the parent company. Had they done a little bit more of that very early on, I think that those companies that could have been formed either as JVs or separate institutions could have been far more successful. I think sitting under the umbrella of a company that was making its money elsewhere made it very difficult for somebody in a different, and I know this from my I worked in liquid crystal and in, you know, spatial light modulators, and I got thrown out of a lot of offices saying we should be doing this.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that sentence for me? You worked in liquid crystal.
Liquid crystal modulators and other types of spatial light modulators, which are quite the thing right now in the industry. That is what people do. And at that time when I was like, we should do this, they were like, oh, isn't she cute? And I get like thrown out of office after office. Well, we do that with film. And, you know, it took a long time for people to understand not only that is it possible, but it will happen this way. And I think had those technologies and those businesses that could have arisen from that separated from Kodak sooner, we would have seen them grow here faster.
Do you ever want to just kind of drive by here on State Street and say, I told you so?
No, because I there's a lot of good that came out of, you know, came out of everything. I look at the rise and fall of businesses and of companies as part of the growth experience of a town. You can't be clinically dependent on a single business or a single company. It's unhealthy.
Yeah, that's kind of the point, at least for me as a now, I hope, lifer Rochesterian, observing that I don't really want a big three anymore. I don't want another. Yeah. I don't want a 65,000 employing company. I mean, I guess, you know, when the Amazon sweepstakes was happening, everyone wanted that. And I not everyone, but most people wanted that. And I see why. But I think I agree with you. I don't know that that's healthy.
I don't think that's healthy. And it's part of why. So I went to Carestream, and then I went to found another startup. I think in that innovation, in that creativity that you get in a small group of people working with the ecosystem, because there is an outstanding ecosystem here, you get so much growth. You get focused growth in the thing that you are most interested in. And I think that that's why we see a lot of rising companies. That's why we see people coming. For Luminate, I bring in companies from all over the world who are excited to come and locate their business here and grow it here. Not because they want to be the big three, but because they want access to the resources.
Did you think about going anywhere else but Rochester?
I often did, especially in the February timeframe. I'd start to get really cold and start complaining. But reality is that the resources that businesses have here are outstanding. The financial resources are outstanding. And the work-life balance, which is terribly important to me. I have children in school. I want them to go to a good school. I want them to enjoy their lives. I'd like to spend time with them. I'd like to not spend it in traffic. And so there were a lot of very good reasons and very good opportunities here, because I did look elsewhere. But
so now with Luminate, and I'm just seeing a note from producer Megan Mack that I didn't even get from you, but Governor Andrew Cuomo announcing today that Luminate NY is accepting applications for round three of the innovative campaign.
Yes.
So tell us about, I want to be careful here, because I don't want to just cheerlead on this. I want to really know. When you have these conversations about bringing people here and you say people are excited, are they excited for the same reasons you are? Do they think about raising families? Do they think about traffic? Do they think about the way cities are laid out? Do they think about cost of living? What are the selling points and what's actually happening right now?
So a lot of what brings people here, and I'm not going to say it's like it's family life, because young companies are often young people. They don't necessarily
sure.
have a
quite,
family.
Yeah, they're invincible. They're going to be 20-something forever.
Exactly. Yeah. So they're not worried about the school system right now. But what they do see when they come to a program like Luminate is that the support they get to grow their business is really unparalleled. So if you get a company that's come here, I'm going to use one of the companies as an example. Circle Optics. Really like this company. Cohort 2. They are doing a 360 camera for AR. But they needed some help with optical design. And they needed a manufacturing supply chain. And they need some software support. And they need marketing support. And they need to meet some investors. They come here and we can give them all of that right here, one after another. And they can build their business without having to waste their time looking for things that we can drop right on their doorstep. And that's really critical, because when you only have a few people in your company, it's hard to find all the help you need. I know this. I did my own marketing and I did my own web design. I really truly stink at both for my last company. It's nice to actually be where you get the help you need.
So what's Luminate get out of this?
Luminate gets investment in companies that are absolutely going to succeed. So I think financially it will return. We also see, I mean, that's because it's an investment fund. It has to return so that we can invest in other companies. I also think that we are seeing companies beginning to hire and beginning to grow here. It's a gradual process. So it's not going to be, and we made, you know, 500 jobs overnight. It's not like that. But it is a gradual, steady, measured growth. They're also using the infrastructure here, like supply chain. When you're five people, you don't make everything. You have to use supply chain. You have to use the businesses around you. So I see them not only growing their own businesses, but helping growth in their neighboring businesses and working with the photonics cluster and with the community. It's really a healthy story.
So what do you think the public or politicians or the news media get wrong about what's going on?
You know, I think that we focus on, first of all, one of the things that people get wrong is the concept of what is optics. Optics, photonics, and imaging is an extremely wide statement, okay? And I've seen it go either way, where it's like lenses and traditional optics, or it's all integrated photonics. You know what? It can also be image processing and software. It can be anything that manipulates light. And when you put it that way, it is a very, very broad area. So we have software companies that are doing image processing. We have a lot of medical device. We have biopharma, which is optics-based because you have to read out of the pharma. And that is one of the highest growth industries in the world. So I think the concept of what is meant by optics is often misunderstood in the region and misrepresented as such. So people think if you're not doing integrated photonics, you're not doing photonics. That's not true. You could be doing a lot of different things.
I think it's a little bit of the same kind of challenge of, you know, for years you were doing addition, and now you're doing trig, and you want everyone in class to understand trig on the first day, and people are going, "Well, we're not doing math. Like, we're not. This isn't math. I've been used to addition here. I mean, it's just so much more complicated to understand and to kind of pitch in a short, sort of elevator ride with somebody about what's happening in a community."
Yes, I think it's harder to explain. I can do it best by showing all the different companies. But the other thing that people need to understand is in any industry like optics, like hardware, it is a gradual growth thing. It's not necessarily going to take off like, you know, I don't think there's going to be an Uber IPO out of one of these companies. But they're going to grow. They're going to hire. They're going to do well. It's gradual. It's ecosystem-based, and it's very, very healthy. It doesn't take a lot of money either. These companies take, you know, $250,000. They don't take $250 million.
I don't necessarily think all of the political leaders, especially who are here on one particular day a few years back, did you a whole lot of favors in tamping down the public hope that it would all be very big very quickly.
Yeah, I think that there was a lot of hope placed in a different type of growth. And I'm not saying that can't happen, but this is not what we're trying to do here. We're trying to do a structured growth plan that encourages businesses to take root, to grow, and to really be positive.
And so Jeff, before I get some listener feedback, as a journalist, what I want to do is give the same kind of space that I would give, for example, an anti-poverty initiative where people are going, well, what are you going to get done in 6 months or a year? Mm-hmm. Well, we've got a 30-year plan here. But you still have to be able to measure return on investment, benchmarks, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And in any industry where there is at least some public money, some taxpayer subsidy or participation on state or federal or local levels, you want to be able to measure return on investment. How should we measure that return?
So return on investment's got some very clear measurables. First of all, with startup businesses, there's a hit or miss. A lot of them don't make it. So one of the things I try to watch for is how's our hit rate? How many of the companies that we invested in, are they still in business and are they doing okay? And
what should the hit rate be, by the way?
I want it to be 100%. Realistically, you're gonna get 50-50. We are still at 100%. It's early, so I expect some that's, you know, that
sure.
may not last.
Sure.
But that tells us, are we picking the right companies? The second thing we've got to look at is, you know, we, especially for the ones that we put more money in, what are they doing locally? It's not enough to put an office here because a lot of people will think, oh, I located my company here. Like, I don't care if you put a desk here. What I want to know is, did you use the manufacturing infrastructure that is here? Are you making something here? Whether it's you or you've hired out to one of our many resourceful companies in the region to get the parts made, is something being created here? And, you know, with that goes jobs. Are you hiring or are those people, are you helping other companies hit job numbers? And finally, in time, these companies, they are VC funded effectively. So they either need to sell or IPO. And that money needs to come back to the state to reinvest in the next generation of companies. That will take a little bit longer to measure, but those are the metrics that we use.
What does a little bit longer generally mean?
I would expect most of these companies to take 3 to 5 years at least before you'll see an exit, because, you know, they're really early. If they exit too early, you don't make enough money. I want them to take their time and make a lot of money.
Well, and, you know, to Mike McDougall's point, kind of comparing CooperVision, you know, the kind of company, CooperVision, right? Is that correct? Thank
That's
you,
right.
Mike. Thank
You're
you
welcome.
For the correction. CooperVision, the kind of company that employs maybe 1,000 people
yeah,
or so
just
in
over
Rochester
1,
area, that still most of the listeners right now might not know anything about or not heard of. What's the name of a company or two that they ought to Google and learn more about that you're excited about?
So, I mean, I can't say anything about Cohort 2 because it looked like I'm favoring somebody, so I'm going to go back to Cohort 1 and tell you a couple that are really exciting. I think you should look at Double Helix. They are doing their manufacturing out of Rochester and Ithaca, and they are growing quite well. I think you should look at Intelon Optics. Their manufacturing is coming out of Rochester as they're growing, and they're probably looking at, you know, rapid international growth. There are some really exciting companies in Cohort 2, but like I said, if I start naming them, I'm going to be in trouble. Come on, see who wins.
When's that going to be, by the way?
On the 27th of June. We open at 11. It's a lunchtime thing, and it's free, but register because it fills. Free food, too, because all the local vendors, local suppliers are coming with their food items.
Let me read our first comment from Gary, who says, I think Kodak might have stifled Rochester's social and cultural life, actually. The stability of Kodak also created stagnation. Our arts and cultural environment have grown since the demise of Kodak, and it's not a coincidence. What do you think?
You know, I don't know that it stifled arts and cultural, because they did do a whole lot of donating in those spaces, but I think that when you're under stress, when you're under duress, you're also at your most creative. And I think that's true artistically. I think that's true for everybody in the region, not just those people employed by Kodak. So I think it brought about a different look. I belong to a group, a dance company, and we got a lot of exciting different types of choreography and such out there because people were able to spend the time and they were looking at things differently.
Julie, how do you feel about Gary's comment on arts and culture in Rochester?
I think if he's been a longtime Rochesterian, that he may see that change from, you know, 50 years ago, because Rochester was at that time very much a company town. But I agree with Sujatha. I don't see that stifling, you know, in decades, because I think the creativity of the people and the appetite for, you know, new things on all fronts, on the arts, culture, sciences, is bottomless.
Yeah, Mike, you want to hit that too?
Sure. I think that maybe reframe it. You know, a few years ago, you could put your hand out as a cultural organization and ask for Kodak to support you. And chances were they would. Now you can't. So I think there's more involvement organically from the folks involved, which is actually creating a more vibrant arts and cultural scene, because they're actually invested themselves versus hoping one of the big three will provide that support.
David emails us and says, the thing that I've observed over my time in Rochester is that we can cultivate great small companies, but then they're bought by a company based elsewhere and we lose them. That's the concern there. So I'm going to start with Sujatha.
So I've seen actually the opposite also happen. So we had a Sony Corporation visiting us to look at the Luminate companies, and there was a company in the area, which is not a Luminate company, which was struggling. They were about to shut down. And we told the Sony guys about it. They're like, hey, let's meet them. They went out and bought them. And they're here. And that's like 25 to 30 jobs and a business in this area that was saved because outside companies came here, saw what was happening, and said, you know, this is cool. We'll buy this.
I've got to be missing something in the story. They're struggling, but Sony wants to buy them anyway?
Yep.
They like the concept?
The technology was outstanding.
Okay.
So they were purchased by Sony. They are right here. I don't know if I'm allowed to disclose their name. I'll email it to you afterwards. But yeah, they were, so we introduced them to the people who are investors from Sony coming to look at our companies, and they loved it.
I think to David's point, and I'll ask Julie about sort of how she sees, you know, maybe Moondog and her own future there, and whether you kind of get bites from outside the region. But inevitably, there's going to be some small companies bought by other companies in other places. That happens organically in business everywhere. The question is, does that define us more than others? And you don't think so?
I don't think so, because I think you're going to see some acquisitions and you'll see some relocations. But I'll point out two things. When you see an acquisition, you also see cash. So money comes back that in the form of, you know, payback on investment, that then goes into another company. So that money stays here and the growth stays here. I don't know that it's actually pretty inexpensive to run a business here. I say this because my last business is material science. Industrial sewering is very, very expensive. Couldn't have done that in the Bay Area. Couldn't have done that in Boston because I would have had to pay enormous amounts of money to truck things in and out. We have that ability to really sustain a business here. So I don't know that you will see some, but I don't think it's worse than anywhere else.
Julie, what's the future of Moondog if someone calls you and says, we love what you're doing, here's a number?
We would entertain and be interested in the number.
A wise man once told me, everything is for sale.
Exactly.
It's just there's different prices. Everything is for sale.
And we have been approached.
You have been approached already.
We have been approached as soon as 2 years after we launched by a very well-known name in entertainment, but the number wasn't right and the vision wasn't right. You know, we have a vision for the company and what we want to do and where we want to grow, and it wouldn't have been the right choice to be acquired by that company at that time.
But it's not impossible in the future.
It's not impossible in the future, absolutely.
All right, investors. Moondog is for sale. Everything's for sale. Everybody, nothing is not for sale. It's a question of where the price is. So, Terry, in our last few minutes here, the chairman of the Light and Sound Interactive Conference, for listeners who missed the early part of the hour, you got a conference coming up here, significant event coming up on June 25th to the 27th at the Riverside Convention Center. So it's coming up next week. Tell us what's happening.
So, as I mentioned before, we have some of our tech giants. We have Facebook, Amazon, Microsoft, and hundreds of companies actually coming to Rochester to have a conference in six various tracks. One of them, AR, VR track. There's a games and interactive media track, as Rochester RIT is a hub for that type of technology, that type of market. We have an audio, music, cinema track. A Department of Defense, and then an optics, photonics, imaging track, all of which I think can showcase the core competencies of this region. And to your question before, Evan, about other companies that purchase, one of the bigs might purchase a smaller company, it's not always where that company will leave because of the core competencies and the ecosystem that is here. And ON Semiconductor is an example, right? So ON Semiconductor bought a division that was Kodak back in the days of our imagers, and that company now is here growing and doing very well. But I don't think they'd leave because of the ecosystems and relationships that they have with in and around that neighborhood. So the Light and Sound Interactive Conference is to leverage those relationships between companies outside this region with companies inside this region.
Get online and get more information where?
Lightandsoundinteractive.org.
And it culminates with Luminate's demo day on the 27th, right?
On the 27th.
Okay, so you kind of gave us a little preview, but tell us a little bit more about what's going to happen on the 27th.
So the doors will open at 11, and you can come on in, and the cohort two companies will have demonstrations of their technology. You'll also see local food vendors sampling their wares, and that'll go on for about an hour. Then every team will get up and have 2 minutes to pitch their technology.
2 minutes.
Yes. Now, we've been working with them for 6 months, so yeah, we're not judging them on 2 minutes.
10 total competitors?
10 competitors.
Okay. Vying for what, more than $2
million? $1 million plus another million in investment dollars.
Okay. So it's not like 2 minutes starting from scratch.
No. We've been working with these companies for 6 months. Yeah. So it is, in that sense, we're not judging them on this 2 minutes. It's more to show people. But we haven't announced who we're putting the money into. So at the end of that, we will announce how the future investment is going to go.
Okay. And you have already made those decisions, right?
We will have by then. We do not have those decisions made yet.
I just wondered if you wanted to make an announcement early, right now.
No, actually, my judging committee is flying in the day before to review everything with us, so we will be spending some time on that.
So it's next week, June 27th, for that. And before we close the hour here, I'll just ask, Mike, we've been kind of taking a look at the national perspective on this. How do you think, if someone now works and what you do in communications, journalists should be looking at this critically, but also in a way that isn't sort of maybe unfair to the realities of what growth and transition mean for a local economy.
Sure. I think two things. One, on a national basis, is understanding the depth of what is here. I think there can be, on a national basis, a bit of a dismissiveness, which is that's a town that was versus the town that is. So I'd like to encourage that. But then on a local basis, is to understand, again, the type of organizations that are hidden in plain sight, and to understand Rochester's place in this global economy. I was in the UK 2 weeks ago for an eye care conference, Optics. You mentioned Rochester. There's no reason to say New York. Rochester is among the big five or six communities in the world in optical innovation, and it's understood.
That's an optimistic note to start closing the program. And Terry, the last 40 seconds, help us do some work to make sure we understand how we should be measuring return on investment from your perspective on this.
For the Light and Sound Interactive perspective, it is companies that visit here that can find value with and collaborate with companies here and then invest in those companies. Or if you're creating a VR or AR product and you need a freeform optics or something, Rochester is the place to come. So we will see that return on investment by those dollars flowing to the companies that can provide a solution to those that have a product need.
Terry Klass is the chairman of the Light and Sound Interactive Conference, which comes your way starting next week. And I want to thank you for taking the time to be here. Good luck with the conference.
Thank you so much.
Mike McDougall, president of McDougall Communications. Thanks for the perspective, Mike. Nice to see you.
Appreciate it.
As always, Sujatha Ramanujan, who is the managing director of Luminate. And I promise the next time we talk, it'll be more about other people. But I really appreciate your perspective and the story. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And our thanks to Julie Gerstenberger, founder and CEO of Moondog Labs, located in Fairport, doing wonderfully well after 5.5 years following her 27 at Kodak. Thanks for telling your story as well.
Thank you.
Short break. More connections coming up.